Hello and welcome to Nebraska Prep Zone Report, a podcast from the Omaha World Herald. We are sponsored today by MD West One, Nebraska's most advanced sports medicine, orthopedics, neurosurgery, and spine care, covering greater Omaha for over 70 years. MDWestOne.com. I'm your host, Jake Anderson, and we have a special episode today of the podcast. I'm joined by Mike Sauter, who is powering through, try to ignore his coughing, and Stu Pospisil. It's going to be a great show. We're going to preview state finals. Let's get right into it.
I'm glad you're sitting in between the two of us so I don't get his cold.
It's not that. It's bad, but not that bad.
If you're watching the video, they're twins today, apparently.
We did not coordinate.
No.
It was just happenstance.
No coordination.
Let's get to Class A, Jake.
I would really appreciate that. Bellevue West versus Omaha West Side. This is the one that it's granddaddy of them all, Class A. And it has a fantastic matchup, game within the game, if Westside chooses to do it. Avante Dickerson potentially guarding Xavier Betts, the Bellevue West wide receiver, Husker commit. Avante Dickerson, the defensive back that's been offered by defensive back factories, LSU, Ohio State, Titan versus Titan. Could we have it?
I think at times they'll match up. I really think the game plan probably will be just Avante stays on his side of the field, and then they trust the other side. I mean, there's so many other weapons for Bellevue West that Westside's going to have to deal with. So traveling him around the field for one guy, you could see it. We'll see. Maybe they change game plans in the middle of it. Maybe they don't do that, and then maybe Betts has a couple big plays, and then they maybe decide to switch that up.
Well, I think maybe they move him around to keep Nate Glantz guessing.
Right.
And, you know, make him kind of react on the spot to where Dickerson is, except I think Bellevue West's passing game is so sophisticated, and like you said, weapons like Keegan Johnson and the tight end and Jay Ducker out of the backfield. Yeah. I mean, they've got so many ways to go. And Westside has other DBs, too, like Colby Bretz is really come on this season.
Right.
And, you know, Westside probably has close to, if maybe not more, D1 talent than Westside in the making.
Yeah, Bretz is a guy, I was going to bring him up, glad you did. He's a guy that's really had a great year as a wide receiver and safety, defensive back, can come in the box and make plays. They made an adjustment, Westside did, from the first time that they played Southeast to the second time, and even for Millard South, too. They they really use Grant Taggy in different ways. He's playing outside linebacker, but they moved him kind of back to a little bit of an inside linebacker, sort of in-the-box safety. They didn't really let him just go straight after the passer. They let him just kind of box him in. That's what they did against Millard South that I think was effective, too. They do. You're right. I mean, Haberman's a guy that has an offer from South Dakota State.
Up front in the line.
Yeah, there's a lot of talent on both sides. And Cole Payton is, we've documented numerous times that he's the first 2021 quarterback with a FCS at least offer in South Dakota State. So, and he can hurt you with his legs too.
And that's a good transition point. Stu, last week leading into the semifinals, you previewed all ended capsules, which I thought was fantastic. Coach comments, their stats, I really enjoyed that. Another fantastic matchup, which of course the winners are going to be Cole Payton of Westside, Nate Glantz of Bellevue West. We could see a lot of points in this game.
Oh, well, remember, the last time these two played, it was 73-62.
It was crazy.
At Westside, it was Westside knocked off Bellevue West in Week 8 in 2017.
Right. Yep.
Mike Huffman, we were trading text over the weekend. He says, I don't care if it goes that high. I just want the 73 this time. But, no, it's not going to be a dull game. It's going to be exciting. It may come down to, you know, fewest mistakes, maybe some field position. Both teams, I think, have really good kickers. Now, where Bellevue West, honestly, and Huffman does not like to kick deep, especially into the wind.
Right.
He has been averse to this since he was at Fort Calhoun as head coach, and it just bugs me sometimes that, you know, let your kickoff team you know, help you instead of kicking out of bounds and even getting it to the 35. Mm-hmm. But Cruz Jurado for Bellevue West, not only is he a DB, but he's been their four-year kicker.
He's a good kicker.
He's a very solid kicker. So field position, you know, the punters, Jackson for Westside and Glance. Nate Lands will punt for Bellevue West. Kind of depends what night it is, too. Mm-hmm. You know, early forecasts suggest that it could be in the 40s at kickoff and be a really nice late fall night. You know, if it changes and gets a little, you know, crummy out there, you know, it can change.
Yeah.
Because these teams, I would say, are more finesse. Mm-hmm. I also would say, looking at our next matchup in this or our next discussion, Jay Ducker.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. West or Bellevue West has a clear advantage in this category.
Oh, yeah, running back. Yeah, no doubt.
You know, Westside does its running by committee. Actually, their best option is Cole Payton.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And Jay Ducker, you know, he's up to 107 touchdowns in his career. He's on the verge of taking out John Croker from Henderson High, which was C1 or C2 back in the early 80s, who had a lot of kicking points, scored 672. So that's the 11-man record. He's within about four touchdowns of, and that's the pace he's been on, and you know he's going to get the ball quite a bit in this game.
Probably 30, 40 touches.
I'd say at least 30. It depends on how effective Glanz is and the receivers against Westside's secondary.
And Payton is their leading passer, leading rusher. Bodie Harrell's their running back. And they mix in Dickerson some there, too. And you're right. I mean, there's obviously a clear advantage. I don't think anyone would doubt that, unless your name's maybe Bodie Harrell. I mean, that's
well, I think it kind of comes down to what night Avante Dickerson has. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because when Westside's lost, Dickerson hasn't been really evident or sharp in the in the games. When he's shown up and he's made plays, they've won games.
Friday afternoon, he
had a huge interception. Yeah.
Interception
to open the game.
And then the touchdown reception was big.
He's got to have some big plays for Westside to win this game. I mean, I'm going to take Bellevue West. You know, if they're number one all season, the defense has improved. We haven't talked much about the Thunderbirds defense.
We've harped on that every week. It's been a point of mine because, you know, they've shut down teams, and every, you know, coming into it, everybody's like, oh, Bellevue West, they gave up 73 points to Westside 2 years ago. They have a high-powered offense because they have to score. Bellevue West defense, what was the stat they've given?
It was 35 points
heading into last week.
For the entire year. That's
right.
Crazy.
Now, again, you know, sorry, Mike Huffman, your schedule was soft. It was nothing really you had to.
I didn't say that.
It has been soft, but your playoff games have shown, and Millard West is a very solid team. In fact, let's be honest.
Yeah.
If Westside's going to have to win the game or play very tough for them to be number two in the final rankings.
One or two, yeah. And that's something – I was going to talk about it, but that's something that I think no one would have a problem with.
And it would honestly be a high rise for Westside to get up to number two, considering they're the lowest seed in every class – all classes, lowest seed to make the finals. They were seeded number 7.
Also ranked number 7.
And ranked number 7. So that would be a big rise. But that's also why everybody expecting a blowout with Bellevue West talent. I think this game is going to be a close one possession, potentially high scoring, but close one possession. Maybe whoever gets the ball.
And here was another factor for Westside these past two rounds. Those were rematches.
Right. Mm-hmm. They knew what they were getting.
They knew what they were getting into. They could learn from their mistakes. Coach Brent Freund last week said the Millard South loss really showed them what they needed to work on for the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And then with Isaiah Harris of Millard South having an ankle that he clearly did not have his usual explosiveness, you know, and Andy Means was not going to use that as an excuse for why the Patriots lost. But, you know, Westside had all the moxie, the mojo with those rematches. And they're going to be pumped up for this one. I mean, you're in Memorial Stadium.
Right.
You know, I think it's going to be behooving to Bellevue West to try and get an early lead and, you know, make Westside play catch up, kind of like what Millard South did in the regular season.
Week 9. Well,
On that 73 point whatever crazy
73-62
game
that was, the record setter.
That was Dickerson's breakout. That was his breakout game, and he returned two kickoffs in that game.
He was a freshman in that game, right?
Yeah. And that was his, like, well, I'm here. So that might be something why Hoffman isn't going to kick
to him. Well, yeah. But you don't want to give the ball at the 35 right. or the 40 either. I mean, you
right.
And WS will kick deep with the wind.
Right.
It's what's going to happen if they have to kick into the wind.
Mm. Well, we'll be looking forward to your guys' fantastic coverage of that. And Sam McEwen, the Husker writer, usually writes from Class A. He's planning on being there with some reaction column, maybe focusing on that Dickerson-Betts matchup if it happens. And I just want to say, I came into Class A, the preview, expecting it to be talking about all the Bellevue West playmakers. But only on this show, with both of your guys' combined knowledge, would we get a special teams breakdown and kicker and punter matchups, which I sincerely enjoyed. It was fantastic. But I wanted to make note of that because I thought it was funny. On to Class B, where this is another fantastic matchup, rematch from last year. Skyhawks won 48-27, and I have a fantastic stat here, courtesy of one of our part-timers. I dug it up Friday night, Andrew Stem. It's the seventh time in A and B combined there's been a rematch.
You mean this year, in these playoffs, right?
No, overall.
State finals.
State
finals, okay.
Teams that has lost the first time, so lost the previous year, they're 4-2 in the rematch.
Okay.
So probably means nothing, but it's a fun fact.
I think what means more is if Jacob Kroll is healthy for.
Yeah, and I don't think he's out. I mean, he's.
You think he's,
like
out?
He's out? Yeah.
That's too bad.
Yeah, it is. He's Scott's most leading rusher. But the Harsh Gordon matchup is going to be. I mean, that's kind of what.
Well, both ways.
At. Yeah.
I mean, they're going to collide on the field right. all night long because Sebastian Harsh is. One of Class B, if not all classes, best linebackers.
Right, outside linebacker.
And sure. Tyson Gordon is a top defensive back that's right. going to North Dakota State.
Right.
Superb quarterback, leader for Scott, who last year was kind of their Swiss Army knife
right.
with Jacob Epperson. This year, he's the man.
He's the do-it-everything guy.
You know, he's going to be passing. He's going to be running. You know, Sebastian Harsh. He's got 877 yards passing. He can throw the ball, too. And ask Roncalli last year when he threw for 5 touchdowns or 6 touchdowns out there. So, Harsh Gordon is going to be a tremendous
neat.
You know, who wins that matchup very well is going to lead their team to the state title. But
I was just going to – for Scottsboro, Josiah Dale had a nice game running the ball. He caught a couple touchdowns or long passes against Roncalli, too. He's a guy that can make a difference. They really use the seam route well on Friday night against Roncalli. From the small portion that was there, they hit it a couple times, and they're physical, very physical.
Mm. And so is Scott.
Yeah, Scott is too. Right. I'm imagining it'll be a little bit of probably a grinder that will try and pop some passes and stuff in there, and a lot of quarterback run.
And maybe momentum, too.
Right.
Because last year, remember, Scott's Bluff took the lead, and Scott was kind of bumbling around. And then once they established Epperson.
Right. It
was basically did he have a big defensive play?
Gordon had an interception.
Interception that kind of got things rolling. And then Epperson ran for 6 touchdowns.
Right.
I see this game being in the 30s.
Right.
I think that, I'm going to pick Scott 25 in a row.
Until they lose.
Yeah,
and again, if Kroll was playing, you know, probably Scott's different. Bluff would, you know, certainly be their equal. I mean, Diallo's is going to have to be Tyson Gordon this year,
right.
be the Swiss Army knife for Scott's Bluff, do a little bit of everything, especially on defense. And what Scott's going to have to do is hold on to the ball a little bit.
Right.
They've been a little sloppy in the playoffs, especially I guess it was the regular season game, excuse me, with Waverly, where they put the ball on the ground 8 times and Waverly.
And a fumble last week in the third quarter or whatever. Like, it was kind of
key. Well, it was 10-6 Waverly at halftime.
Yeah.
And then Gordon throws 3 touchdown passes.
Right.
So,
right.
you know, again, I think we had the 4 best teams in the semifinals in Class B, and I would have loved to have seen the entire Scott's Bluff and Collie game because I love points.
That was a basketball game. That was basketball in Grant. There was even a couple of touchdowns. They were called back because of penalties that didn't
count. Why did one reader say it was a rugby game?
Yeah, it felt. I mean, that's probably about right.
I think Mike Patterson, a writer that was there, he was joking that he ran out of ink trying to compile the box score.
That's a lot.
Harsh had 8 total touchdowns in that game, 5 rushing, 3 passing, nearly 600 yards. Mm. So Scott's Bluffs can score. Scott can score a game in the 30s. I mean, edge to Scott, who's won 25 straight, 4 straight title game. It's their 7th appearance in 8 years. But you talked to Sebastian Harsh recently.
Yeah.
Scott's Bluff isn't looking at it as Scott is unbeatable.
No, they know this team. Yeah, they're not.
And that helps that they're back in, and they've seen the experience of Memorial Stadium. I mean, it does. First-timers or, you know, again, teams that come in from the West that have a long road trip and, you know, you're saying on the bus, I'm sure, dreaming of what the experience is going to be like. Scott's Bluff, they've already felt that.
Mm-hmm.
And they should be settled down. And, you know, it's going to come down again to, I think, who gets a little push, a little momentum, you know, a turnover or a, you know, pop a play. And, mm-hmm. and maybe you build on that. You get the 3-and-out and you get the next touchdown.
The 2 linemen to watch in this game, too, are Sam Clarkson. He's committed to Northwest Missouri State.
Where his brother
big,
is.
Yes, big offensive lineman for Scott's Bluff. Really nice player. And then Blake Anderson, committed to Northern Iowa for Scott. Both are kind of two-way players. They mix in on the defensive lines, too. So those two probably will go at it a little bit. And that'll be kind of fun. Both teams are real physical. It should be another fun, high-scoring-ish game, I would say.
Well, and I 2 more to watch for Scott are Gunnar Ott and Max Brinker.
Correct, yes.
Both two-way players. And, you know, again, Deesing has been a good running back at times for Scott. He's going to have a good game against Scott's Bluff, or Ott is going to have to take the advantage of his carries. Matt Sherman's kind of mixed and matched his running backs based on feel and performance. Is it Liebentritt?
Yeah.
Has gotten some carries too, but Scott's going to have to be able to run the ball some and not put all on the arm of Tyson Gordon or his legs.
True.
Before we get to our last 4 classes, we have a special message from our sponsor, MD West One.
As the official team doctors for high school and college teams across Greater Omaha, MD West One Sports Med Doctors can get you back into the game stronger than ever. Meet the Sports Med team at mdwestone.com or call 402-390-4111.
We're back into it, and we're going to go C1, but we're actually going to call an audible. I said 4 more classes. We're going to add 6 man to it, preview 5 more classes. But before we get to C1, thank you, MD West 1, MD West 1, or MDWest1.com. Wahoo versus Pierce. Pierce shut down the high-powered Adams Central offense. Quarterback Evan Johnson, that record setter there. How does that help him going into this one?
Well, Pierce has still got a chip on his shoulder from being tripped up at Wahoo Newman last year. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got Oestreich, you got Tinker, and you got Freeman, the triplets there. Oestreich's, I think, the one that's been hurt a little bit, quarterback. Mm-hmm. So they're not going to have a second straight 1,000-yard triplet season. But Pierce is good on offense. It's good on defense. It's got a championship-level coach. Mark Bramer's looking for another one. Mm-hmm. And kind of the mirror image on the other side is Wahoo with Chad Fox as coach. First time in the finals. We've thought of Wahoo as a basketball school for the past 30 years. They now have a football team they can be proud of.
Right.
And a lot of those kids are playing either football or basketball or wrestling for them.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And
Thomas Wedo, their quarterback, is going to be one of their better basketball players.
Right. You know, Trevin Lubin is their main man for Wahoo. He did get dinged up last week against Wayne. So, you know, he's going to... Unlike Pierce, they've got basically Trevin Lubin as their main running option, and they also have the big line to go with it.
That they rotate like 9 guys.
Their offensive line always stays fresh, and it's probably a deeper rotation as we've seen in C1 in a while. And I'm going to pick Wahoo again. It's number 1 versus number 2. We got a lot of number 1s that rank teams in these finals, and I think Wahoo's enjoying a special season, but this is going to be, I think, a touchdown game, don't you,
this
Mike?
It'll be super close and probably low scoring, I'm guessing. Not a lot of passing, ball control, who can run the ball better. like, you know,
sounds like a great
21-17 or something.
Let me throw out the X factor here. Could be Jesus Zaragoza for Wahoo, the kicker.
Yeah.
Because I think he's made 6 or 7 field goals out of 9 or 10 attempts this year. He's got like 70 out of 72 extra points. I'm not sure Pierce has that. And again, he's a good kickoff.
6 of 8 field goals and 70 of 73 extra points.
That's that's a good weapon to have.
Along
with
40.
We've seen how windy it can get in Memorial Stadium in November.
And if you have to go for 2, those aren't givens.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
At St. Francis, which we'll talk about in a few minutes.
Yeah.
All right. C2, another fantastic matchup here. Oakland Craig, BRLD.
No, Sutton.
Sutton.
I have my notes wrong. I'm sorry.
We cannot slight the Mustangs.
Oakland Craig against Sutton. Sutton, to not slight the Mustangs, Sutton and C2, Scottsbluff and B are the only number one seeds in the 11-man brackets to make the championship game.
But not the only number one ranked team. So.
Credit to Stu's rankings.
Anyway.
Listen to Stu, not NSAA.
You've got two very powerful teams again. Sutton is going to be basically a run-oriented.
Jackson Perry.
Jackson. Jackson's a very good runner. He's got a couple thousand-yard seasons in him. Sutton last week looked very good in taking down – why am I drawing a blank on
BRLD.
BRLD, which had a high-powered offense. Their defense was suspect at times, especially against the good opponents. Oakland Craig has just been rolling, except for the one game where they lost Thompson at quarterback and – Hardington CC in the first round. That was a 28-26 game.
Yeah,
Thompson, I believe,
got him back. Yeah,
And they've got the Teal kid at tight end. Where's he going, Mike?
Seagren. He's going to South Dakota State. Yeah,
and they've got a lot of parts.
Yeah, their defense is salty, and he can play. Seagren plays defensive end. He's a big 6'7" dude trying to deflect passes. Sutton doesn't pass. I mean, at all. I'm looking at statistics here. They're 30 of 50 on the year for 500 yards.
Miller-North-like.
So, yeah, I mean, it's not – you don't – yeah.
But you still have to respect it. I would think that Oakland Craig's going to load the box and
– correct.
Okay, you're going to have to throw deep on us once and then we'll respect it.
Right.
But, again, I like Oakland Craig in this one.
Their defense has been really good.
Besides this is a number two versus three matchup in the ratings. I had moved – Oakland Craig up and St. Paul had moved up to number one when BRLD had a little trouble stopping people later in the season. And I think Oakland Craig is just on a roll, and this is one of their best teams.
Yeah. But one of the really good linebackers, particularly C2 linebacker, Michael Brands for them, he's a really good linebacker, leads the team in tackles and Oakland Craig's defense. They're very well coached. Their defense is great. I'm not sure how Sutton can just run the ball and win.
Right.
That'll be a kind of a question.
At least they complete 50% of their passes. Right. So it's not like you've got a poor thrower.
Right.
You choose not to throw. So how much they mix that in the game plan and dictated by where they are in the game. Mm-hmm. It's not like they're incapable. They just choose not to.
Correct, yeah.
And we've brought it up before, but it's a fantastic storyline, I think. Oakland Craig, back in March, their field was under 6.5 feet of water. We've all seen the photos that water, it was up to the goalpost. Their coach said that the entire equipment shed was just flooded, and now 8 months later, they're in the state title game. They're in Memorial Stadium. How fantastic would it be for that community?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, it's one of the great sports communities of the state. They've got a golf course that has seen its share of flooding in the past couple of years. Great little track to play. What Sutton has to hope is the flood in March doesn't become a tidal wave against Sutton in November.
I like that.
I might have to use that in my column, one way or another.
You
they stem the tidal wave.
You definitely like need that. To use that one,
yep.
For sure.
I'll be looking forward to it, as well as I'm looking forward to 8-man-1, Osceola High Plains against Burwell. If you want to talk about basketball on grass, Roncalli, Scotts Bluff, these two games, 8-man-1 and 8-man-2, basketball on grass.
It is. I've seen Everybody but Pleasanton in this foursome in the playoffs. Burwell, when Jace Williams was ill mid-season, he kept playing. He wasn't 100%. He barely got 200 yards or around 200 yards in four games. When he's healthy, Burwell rolled a really good Cambridge team in the game I saw in the quarters, and then took care of business against Dundee County Stratton on Monday night in the semifinals, 28-10. And I was able to see the second half of the Osceola High Plains game, that the Clash and Clarks, that unfortunately Mike was unable to be because he got the croup.
Something.
But something. Keaton Van Housen, you've talked with him.
Yeah, he's a special kid. I mean, he's, you know, looking at it, trying to, I think what he's trying to do is get a walk-on offer from Nebraska, but his UNK, some Morningside, some D2 NAI stuff, which is
great lineage. His dad was a 1,000-yard rusher. His uncle Dale was a 2,000-yard rusher. You know, this is the Van Housens are from Polk.
Right.
And Polk, Cordville, Osceola, and Clarks make up the communities involved in this co-op, which is dissolving after this year.
It's been around for 2 years or whatever.
Yeah, they've been together for 2 or 4 years. Now they're, after this game, they're back on their own playing eight-man next year. But it was a fun night in Clark's. It was standing room only. They brought in extra bleachers, 1,500 to 2,000. Mm-hmm. There, and it was a great game, 34-30. Van Housen scored in the final 2 minutes, and the Storm Dogs, great nickname.
Yes.
I'll be sad to see that nickname go. They were up to the task when Cross County, who had scored with 5 minutes left to take its only lead, tried in vain to go downfield. So, in this one, both teams unranked. Osceola High Plains started 1-2. Mm-hmm. We had high hopes for them, and they've kind of, good competition early and trying to find their way. They haven't lost since, so they've won 9 in a row, and Burwell, I think, is maybe on 8. Seven or eight game winning streak. I like Burwell here, having seen both teams. And here's the thing with Burwell, too. 6 sophomores start.
Wow.
So they've been in the finals like 4 of the past 5 years. They've got a state title in there. They win this one, conceivably staying healthy. Another one or two could be in the sophomore class's future.
They have looking at quick defensive stat here, Burwell has 11 interceptions on the year. That's pretty good for
like eight-man team. Because a lot of teams don't throw the ball that
yeah.
much.
They have 11 interceptions. That's a lot. I mean, just looking at it. And then 9 fumble recoveries. So they're
very opportunistic.
Very opportunistic defense. And Jace Williams is clearly their leader on offense.
Yeah. It'll be Williams versus Van Housen and how they each attack the other's defense.
Right.
But they'll not leave the field.
No.
8-man 2, Pleasanton against Humphrey St. Francis. Another matchup. I know you said you haven't seen Pleasanton. What are we expecting from this one?
Well, St. Francis has a very strong line with good skill people. You've got Trevor Pfeiffer at quarterback, Taylor Wemhoff at running back. They played number 2 Sacred Heart Monday, 24-16. Sacred Heart had stayed in the game by forcing a fumble. Pfeiffer was crossing the goal line, and helmet went on the ball. So what could have been an icing touchdown became a real tense game in the last 3 minutes, and that was good for St. Francis. Another close game on the other side out west at Pleasanton, where Overton helped Pleasanton out 6 fumbles.
Yeah.
Lost in that game. And Jackson Keyshaw, Pleasanton's quarterback, returned one scoop and score for like a 20-yard score, and then they got a score late after a turnover. So Pleasanton is going to ball hunt on defense. St. Francis is going to have to make sure not to be fumble-prone. Mm-hmm. And they traditionally are not. I mean, Eric Kessler's teams are very, very schooled. Keyshaw and at quarterback has thrown for about 2,600 yards. Actually, Pleasanton won that game, had only 64 yards of offense.
That's great.
Which is, for eight-man, is really astonishing.
Almost unheard of.
Keyshaw's top receivers include Ricky Westland, the coach's son, Tice. Is it Tice?
Yeah.
And then a couple others also have over 500 yards. So he's got a lot of options. You know, Pleasanton in the past had been kind of a primary running team with Keyshaw. They've certainly put the ball in the air, and I believe it's the first time in the finals for the Bulldogs.
Yeah,
and right. Again, the only ranked team out of these 4 and 8 men is Humphrey St. Francis, and
they've been.
There's no reason to go against him.
Something on Pfeiffer, you said Pleasanton throws it. That he has Trevor Pfeiffer. There's also Tanner. He has 6 interceptions on the year. So not as their quarterback, he does kind of a little bit of everything.
And he's got an arm. He threw one to Tanner that was probably now downwind.
Yeah.
Probably 50 in the air, and he caught it in stride. And
he's one of the better all round athletes in D2. In D2,
yeah.
No doubt. Trevor Pfeiffer is. He's a really good basketball player too. So. I'm excited to see him actually play.
You know, here's the thing there. They're still discussing. They're going to discuss after the season whether they stay in 8 or go to 6.
Oh, wow.
Because they've got small numbers coming up. And Eric Kessler just told me today that he wanted to hold off on the discussion until after the playoffs. So you don't get that in the kids' minds. But they've been playing in junior high, 6-man.
Wow.
So they've got very small numbers of kids interested in the grades coming up. And that'd be, I mean, that.
Yeah.
You just hate to see this continued decline in both enrollment and interest.
Yeah. And, I mean, they have one of the great 8-man stadiums. I mean, fields and stadiums. Beautiful up there.
Yeah. No, and it was semi-warm up there, even with a 30-mile-per-hour wind. Yeah. Normally it'd be about 2 parkas and. And it was a nice day, but how about let's talk some six man too.
Speaking of 6-man, I know that you really want to, and I really want to. One of my life goals to be a 6-man coach. That's so much fun. Everybody touches the ball, just line up the quarterback, get a good 300-pound guy, and just. So what can we expect from the 6-man state final?
Well, but you can't run it without a second handoff.
Yeah, you have to have.
You can't just take off.
Yeah,
you got to have a center to quarterback to somebody.
Yeah. And then it can go to anybody else.
Right.
Well, now we're getting into 6-man strategy.
Watch it on News Channel Nebraska
Friday night,
7 o'clock out of Kearney, and you're going to see #1 Harvard and #2 McCool Junction.
Right.
And these teams aren't that far apart. They're in kind of east south central Nebraska. Harvard's been the season long #1 and. I think I might have even had McCool Junction #2 from the start. So these are kind of the teams tapped to all season to collide. And with David Riola and Noah Okraska? Well, I'm sorry if I didn't say your name right, Noah. But that's Harvard's #2.
Okraska.
Like, kind of like rhymes with Nebraska.
Yeah.
And how about on the McCool Junction side?
McCool, let me pull it up here. Leading rusher for McCool Junction is Matthew. Not going to be able to pronounce this correctly, so I totally.
I'm sorry, folks. This is great radio.
Matthew Chan. No. I'm sorry, Dana Hobbs. He's their leading rusher for McCool Junction with 1,259 yards rushing.
Okay. How about passing?
Passing is Dana Hobbs again.
Okay, I thought.
323.
So they're going to be primarily running too.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's a great venue, UNK, for this.
I went last year to the 6-man. I liked it. It was fun. It was cold, but it
was fun.
And
I'll take Harvard. Mm-hmm. I've got 6 #1s, and I just need to get 2 picks to beat Mr. Patterson, our volleyball writer, who had a. Well, let's put it this way: there were a lot of surprise results in volleyball this year, and that's the way it is. I mean, we do this for fun, and you think you know what you're doing, but you know what? It's the kids that make the plays.
Right.
Definitely. Well, we went a little bit long this week, so I want to thank you for sticking with us. And I want to thank Stu for joining us. We'll have to have you back to talk all Nebraska football, boys basketball.
We have basketball ahead?
Basketball.
I believe so.
Practice started this week.
I know. It must have killed you to miss 2 days of practice.
I did. I will be at plenty in the next.
I thought you were going to be with our boss holding hands out of Miller North on Monday.
I'll be at Miller North later today.
Well, we'll save the hoop stock for a future podcast. Thanks for joining us, guys. Enjoy the state finals Monday and Tuesday at Memorial Stadium. Until next time, thanks for listening.